Raised by wolves with canine DNA in his blood, having trained more than 24,000 vets, helping you and your fur babies thrive. Live in studio, it's Pet Talk Today with Will Bangura, answering your pet behavior and training questions. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host and favorite pet behavior expert, Will Bangura.
Good Saturday morning, pet lovers. I'm Will Bangura, and you are listening to Pet Talk Today. I'm here each and every Saturday morning at 12 noon Eastern Time on Facebook Live. Also, I do an audio podcast, the Pet Talk Today podcast. Please subscribe if you haven't subscribed to the Pet Talk Today audio podcast. Make sure that you go to Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to your podcasts and just do a search for Pet Talk Today. And subscribe to us, because the content that we do here on Facebook, yeah, we upload that to the audio podcast, but I do specific podcasts that are just audio as well. So you want to make sure that you're not missing that. Hey, I'm so glad that you're here today. If you're brand new to Pet Talk Today, I want to welcome you. If you're a regular listener, regular viewer of Pet Talk Today, I want to thank you so much for your support. Before we get into the show today, I just want to take a quick second, just a quick second. If you like what we do, please, where you're listening, the audio podcast, please give us a 5-star review. And all you need to do is go look for the Pet Talk Today audio podcast. And then when it comes up, just scroll all the way down to the bottom. It'll give you the option to do, you know, the review. It gives you the stars, and you click on how many stars, and you just do a review. Really, really would appreciate that. I can't tell you how difficult it is to get people to give reviews, even if they love you, right? Because it takes a little bit of time. It is a little bit inconvenient. So I'm asking you to inconvenience yourself today to help me out. Please give us a review. Really, really appreciate that. Do me a favor, hit that like button and also hit that share button. Please hit that like button, hit that share button. Today is National Pet Fire Safety Day, July 15th. National Pet Fire Safety Day. We'll talk briefly about that. But I also want to talk about a couple topics, and that is, how do you introduce dogs? Especially if you've got a concern that there might be a problem with two dogs getting along and you need to introduce them. You know, I work with a lot of clients where they're blending families, okay? And one family or one partner already has a dog, and they want to move in with their other partner or family that already has a dog. And there might be some issues. And that can be very stressful. You know, it's already stressful to be combining families, to be moving in, or for couples to take that next step to move in together. And imagine this. Imagine they both have dogs that they absolutely love, but they might not get along. Well, how do you introduce two dogs? We're going to talk about the do's and don'ts for a good introduction so that they don't get into a fight and you don't have those kind of problems. Also, I want to talk a little bit about how to help fearful dogs and reactive dogs. Maybe some of you are taking your dogs for a walk, and on the walk, your dog sees another dog, your dog sees another person, and maybe one or two things happens. Maybe they get very scared, or maybe they start getting reactive. You know, when an animal perceives something as threatening, and there doesn't have to be a real threat, but when an animal perceives something as threatening, they're going to go into fight or flight. So they've got a couple options. And a lot of times, they're going to go into fight if they can't get away. And that's pretty common. Think about it. They feel like they're trapped. they're going to go into fight. And that's why we see more reactivity on leash and even more reactivity from your dogs when you're holding a really, really tight leash. They're scared. They can't get away. That's part of it. The other part of it is the frustration. They get to the end of that leash and they're being restrained. And that increases frustration. It increases drive. And that can make a reactive dog a lot more reactive. Then on the flip side, you know, we've got some of you folks that have dogs that when they see another dog, when they see another person, they become very fearful. Now, they might just start panting. They might start drooling. They might tuck their tail. Their breathing might change. Their pupils may dilate. Their ears might go back. They might want to run away. They might want to run behind you. Well, we're going to talk about what you can do to help give that fearful dog confidence, and what can you do to help that reactive dog not view dogs and view other people as threats. How can you keep them calm? How can you keep them relaxed? Because here's the thing I want you to think about. Reactive behavior. Let's think about reactivity. Let's think about aggression. Okay. That behavior, that outward display of behavior is not the real problem. The real problem is the dog's emotional state and the association that the dog has with the trigger, whether that trigger be a person or another dog. Think about it. The dog has a perception of another dog or another person. They perceive it as threatening. So because of that perception, because of that emotional state that the dog has, they engage in particular behaviors. Do you think the dog would engage in aggressive behavior if the dog was feeling joyful and calm and relaxed and confident? Now, what we need to start thinking about is changing that underlying emotional state. So you're too fixated on the behaviors. And there's a lot of trainers that do listen to the podcast as well. And a lot of you are starting to realize that punishment does nothing for an aggressive or reactive dog. Hopefully nobody's punishing a fearful dog. But punishment just suppresses the behavior, the outward behavior, which is not the real problem. Because if you use punishment to suppress that outward behavior, well, maybe with enough fear, pain, or intimidation, you can get that dog to stop that outward display for a little while. But what have you done about the underlying emotional state? You know, that's like fire. That underlying emotional state is like fire that's underneath a pot of boiling water. That boiling water is not going to stop until you turn off the fire, which is the emotional state. So until you change that emotional state, the behavior is not going to change. Not permanently. Not permanently. See, a lot of you get that false sense of security. Maybe you send your dog away to a board and train. Boy, that can be problematic. Now, I'm not bashing all board and trains. You know, there are some good reasons to send your dog away for training. There's not many. Very few reasons, okay? Very few reasons. And maybe I should do it. Maybe I should do a show about that. But when we're dealing with punishment, it just suppresses the behavior. The dog's afraid to act out. The dog doesn't want to experience pain. The dog doesn't want to be afraid. It doesn't want to be intimidated. Doesn't want that pressure. So it grins and bears it grins and bears it. You know, it's white knuckling it through the world because the dog is very, very, very anxious, very, very, very nervous. And it has that underlying emotional state that didn't go away. So really, it's just a matter of when. It's not if it's going to come back. It's when it's going to come back. And usually it's going to come back within 2 months. And I'm telling you, I can't tell you the hundreds, maybe even thousands of pet parents that I've talked to over dozens of years. decades where they've sent their dog away that was reactive or aggressive to a board and train, and the dog came back and they had the dog around other people and dogs, and the dog, to the untrained eye, seemed just fine. But when you understand canine body language, because dogs can't tell us what they're feeling, can they? Oh, it'd be nice. Wouldn't it be nice if they could tell us what they're feeling? God, I would love that. But they can't. But we can predict, well, first of all, we can identify what a dog's underlying emotional state is when we truly understand all the many nuances of canine body language. And there are dozens and dozens of signals in a dog's canine body language that they will signal all kinds of things. Hey, I'm happy. Come closer. Hey, I'm nervous. Go away. Hey, I'm scared to death. Go away. Hey, I'm going to hurt you. Go away. Hey, I'm no threat. You know, they've got these signals, appeasing signals. You know, sometimes a dog, if they wanted to fuse what they might perceive as a threat. Now, again, there might not be a real threat, but what they might perceive as a threat, they may turn their head away. That's an appeasement behavior. That's basically communicating to another dog or another person, hey, I don't want to be a threat. I'm not a threat to you. So trying to de-escalate things. Lip licking, tongue flicks, yawning, whale eye. You know what whale eye is? I should find a picture on my phone. Let me do that. Bear with me, folks. Let me take a second. Let me find a picture on my phone so that we can all look at it. Okay. And this is a picture that I found here on Facebook. All right. So here's a picture. And how many times do you see a picture of a dog and a small child hugging the dog? And to the untrained eye, it looks, oh, how cute is that? Well, I want you to see something. Do you see the white part? Here, let me blow it up bigger. Do you see the white part of the dog's eye? That's what we call whale eye. And that means that the dog is very close to getting ready to bite, okay? Basically, the dog's head is not turned towards the child. But this eye, the whale eye, is turned and darting towards the kid because the dog is scared to death. Dogs hate to have people hug them and put their arms around them. I know, you think your dog loves it. They really don't. Most hate it. We've got what's called hard eyes. Can you see that? I don't know if you can see that, but where there's that very distinct mark between the pupil and the iris. We've got nostrils that are flared. We've got a mouth that's closed. We've got some muscle tension here in the forehead. If you look at the muscles, you can see that there's some tension there. Okay. Those are all stress signals. This is very dangerous. This is something that if you understood canine body language, you'd be like horrified. Like, oh, you got to stop that. The baby's going to get bit. Now, let's take a look at this child. Okay. The child almost looks scared to death. I don't know. Why do you put your kids through this? Why do you do that? I just don't get it. Anyway, canine body language is absolutely amazing. Last week I did, or no, was it this week? This week, last week? Actually, it was this week, I believe. I went out and I had to assess a dog that allegedly bit somebody. So this is for a dog bite case. And I took video. I took a lot of video. And their attorney for the defendants themselves, who are the pet parents for the dog, and the attorney for the person that got bit, they all, I'm sure, looked at what they saw with the dog from their eyes and thought, yeah, everything's fine with this dog. It's a happy-go-lucky dog. Not at all. I'm not going to go through the details of it, but when you understand canine body language, there's an awful lot that you're going to learn about how your dog is feeling. And that allows you to be able to do what you need to do to help your dog, A, feel better, B, ward off. See, you can predict behaviors. Canine body language allows you to predict behaviors. And it was because of the canine body language of the dog that I was assessing that allegedly bit somebody in this court case. Based on the dog's body language, I was able to predict that there is a moderate to high probability that given the context and the situation of this case, that the dog did bite the person. And this is not an aggressive dog. This is actually a pretty sweet dog. But it's anxious and fearful. And if it perceives a threat, it becomes reactive. And in this case, it most likely bit this gentleman. But yeah, canine body language, it's absolutely huge. National Pet Fire Safety Day. So I was reading about this today and found out, do you know that every year over 1,000 fires are started by your pet? The fires are started by your cat, they're started by your dog. And I was reading, and it's candles. That makes sense, right? Imagine a tail knocking over a candle, or the dog or the cat running around and knocking over a candle. Think about it. Yeah, we light candles at my house. New information. I got to watch for that. Got to be careful. Also, some dogs, depending upon your stove, some dogs actually turned on the stove and a fire started. And then there were some dogs, believe it or not, this is just insane, but in a fireplace, they actually got in there and they pulled out some wood. And I'm telling you, this can happen. I had a Rottweiler. I had a chocolate lab. They both love to go into, I had a fire pit. I'd sit out on the patio. They would love to go in there. I'd have to stop them. They'd go in there and they'd want to take out a little burning piece of wood. Until I saw that, that was new for me. I've never seen a dog do that, but these things happen. Over 1,000 fires a year started by your pets. Now, here's the other thing. Most of us don't even have a plan as far as what are we, the humans, going to do. If there's a fire, what are we going to do? Do we have a plan to get out of the house? Much less get the pets out of the house? Yeah, it's got me thinking. I don't have a plan, but I think I'm going to put something together. And you know, ever see those stickers? I don't know where you can get them, but you can get these stickers. Well, you can get anything on Amazon, but stickers that, you know, you put on your door or the window by the door, you know, and it's specifically for emergency responders. If there is a fire or an emergency, that you put down, hey, I've got two cats, I've got a bird, I've got four dogs. It's a lot of dogs, huh? But what are you doing preventatively, proactively, in case there's a fire? A, that your pets don't start a fire. B, that they don't get hurt by a fire. And C, what's your plan to get yourself and your pets out safely? Think about that. I'm going to be thinking about that. We're going to be talking about it at my house, I'll tell you that. Okay. I also want to take questions today. I'm going to go to an email question. So, hey, if you've got a question about your dog's training, if you've got a question about your dog's behavior, do me a favor. Go ahead and in the comment section, put your question, type your question in the comment section. And also let me know where you're watching from and what kind of pets you have, where you're watching from, and what kind of pets that you have. Always like to know that. Before I start going into some of the questions about your dog's training and behavior, you know, I need to talk about our sponsor, Calm Dogs. Calm Dogs is the world's most effective calming aid for dog anxiety. And it's not just for dogs that have anxiety. Yes, it works with dogs with anxiety and fears, phobias, dogs that are afraid of noises like fireworks or storms, but this also, Calm Dogs also works for aggression and reactivity. And of course, dogs that are afraid of car rides, grooming, and vet visits. Visit Calm Dogs, that's calmdogs.com, or doganxiety.com. Right now, we've got a 20% sale till the end of the month. We got a 20% sale to the end of the month. By the way, if you did not know this, 6 years of painstaking research and work went into the development of Calm Dogs, which is something that I developed. And the reason I developed Calm Dogs was because I needed and wanted something natural for my dogs who had anxiety. And there were lots of clients that I had, pet parents, that they needed something for their dog. They tried everything on the market and nothing worked. And it's kind of crazy because I tried everything on the market and nothing worked. And there's a lot of stuff out there making a lot of big claims that's doing nothing. Well, that's not acceptable for me as a certified behavior consultant. I've got to have results. So I did the research and I formulated this product, Calm Dogs. And I can't tell you, it's a game changer. We have so many incredible testimonials from people. It's just changed their lives with their dogs. So check out calmdogs.com. Check out doganxiety.com. Hey, I'm so confident that Calm Dogs will help and work for your dog that if you try it for 45 days and take it as it's supposed to be taken, if it doesn't help your dog, I will gladly refund 100% of your money. It doesn't cost you a nickel. Okay. Let me go to a question here. I've got a question from Mary, and Mary has a four-month-old, oh yeah, you got a puppy lab, so it's crazy. Mary's got a four-month-old Labrador retriever named Reggie. Oh, I love that name. But Reggie is a handful. He jumps all of the time, and he is darting out the door, and I'm very worried that he is going to get hurt if he runs into the street. Well, so we got a couple things going on here. We got a puppy that's jumping, and we got a puppy that's darting out the door. And then we've got a puppy that's just got a lot of anxiety, or excuse me, not anxiety, but a lot of energy, okay? So one of the first things that we need to talk about is what are we doing to burn off some of that energy? That puppy has a lot of needs, and not just physically needing to be stimulated, but mentally needing to be stimulated. You know, have you heard about canine enrichment? Canine enrichment are activities to really stimulate the dog mentally and physically. You know, a lot of behaviors, a lot of anxious behaviors, a lot of unruly behaviors are rooted in boredom and anxiety. So when we can provide activities for the dog, and a big part of that is just training. Right now, right? You got a young puppy. You know, the puppy doesn't come into the world with a manual, a behavior manual. It doesn't know. A puppy is just being a puppy. A dog is just being a dog. They're not being dominant. I don't want you to think because the puppy is jumping on you, and don't let anybody tell you that's a dominant behavior. It's not. Dog's interested in greeting you. The dog wants to have fun. It wants to engage. I'm not going to get into how we reinforce that behavior and how actually we create jumping behavior, but we do. Now, what I want you to think about, and I want all of you to think about this, when you have a problem behavior that you want corrected, I want you to first say to yourself, what behavior would I rather have my dog do in that situation? And let's train an alternative behavior that if your dog is committed to doing that behavior, it would be incompatible with the behavior you don't want. So in this case, the behavior you don't want is jumping. What are some things that we could train this puppy to do that would be incompatible with jumping? Well, having the dog sit, training the dog to sit. You know, it can't have its rear end on the ground and be jumping at the same time. It'd have to give up sit to jump. Lying down, that's another great one. Can't be lying down and jumping at the same time. You'd have to give up lying down to jump. Going to your bed or your spot or your place. Hey, if they're hanging out on their bed or their spot or their place, they can't be jumping. Now, when you come home and your puppy jumps on you, It's a big deal. Are you getting super excited to see your puppy? Well, stop. You need to freeze like a tree. You need to make sure that when you come home, you're the most boring, calm, stationary individual in the world. Don't get your puppy excited. Think about it. You do that, and then you get upset when your dog jumps. You just set your dog up for failure. Stop setting your dogs up for failure. So your dog is happy and excited to jump on you. That's positive reinforcement. Your dog is happy. Your dog is excited to jump on others. That's positive reinforcement. So guess what? When you're training that alternate behavior that would be incompatible to jumping, or the behavior you don't want if it's a different behavior, you better make sure that the work you're doing with your puppy or dog is a whole lot more interesting and rewarding than jumping on somebody and the petting that they probably get and the excitement of that interaction. So what does that mean? That means that high-value food rewards, wonderful toys, you need to be positively reinforcing, and for a lot longer than you think, to make sure that that is a conditioned behavior, not something you have to keep reminding your puppy or dog to do. So here's the deal. How about training your dog every time the door opens up to go to its bed or its spot? How about training the puppy or dog every time the door opens up to sit and stay? Training the puppy or dog every time the door opens up to lie down. Now, first you're going to, probably want to put that on a verbal cue. Start teaching the puppy to sit when you say sit. Start teaching the puppy to lay down when you say down. Start teaching the puppy to go to the dog bed or place or spot when you give that cue. Working on that. Now, what do you need to do? You need to work on that every day. Not a long time. Don't put in 20, 30 minutes. It's way too long. 10 minutes. 10-minute sessions are fantastic. How about you do 3 or 4 of those? Much more effective to do 3 or 4 10-minute training sessions than one 30 or 40-minute session. 10 times more effective. It's a joke to do one training session a day for 20 to 30 minutes or 30 to 40 minutes. Multiple short 7, 10-minute sessions. Those are fantastic. But you're going to want to do this every day, and you're going to do this repetitiously. How many repetitions should you do in a training session? I don't know. How many can you do in 10 minutes? But you want to do as many as you can in those 10 minutes. There's 3 components to teaching sit, to teaching lie down, and to teach the dog to go to place or its spot or its bed. One is actually just teaching the behavior. Sit means your butt's on the ground. Down means your belly's on the ground. You're lying down. Spot, bed, or place means you go to that spot, bed, or place. So the first component is teaching them to do it when you give the command. Now, I like to teach all 3 of those as an implied stay. An implied stay. The word stay does not get your dog to stay. Stay happens by going through a certain sequence of training steps. Every time your dog wants to come out of the exercise, whether it's sit or down or going to its bed, spot, or place, you're just going to give that cue again. You're going to get your dog to do it, even if you've got to help your dog. However, don't reward that one. Reward every time you ask for it. But if you don't give your dog permission to come out of sit, if you don't give your dog permission to come out of down, if you don't give your dog permission to come out of being in its spot, bed, or place, give that cue again. Recommand. Help the dog to do that behavior. Do not reward it. Okay? You reward the dog for staying there. And reward the dog often and with a lot. Boom. Here's a treat. Here's a treat. Take a step. Here's a treat. Here's a treat. Here's a treat. Take a step. Here's a treat. Take a step. Here's a treat. Here's a treat. Here's a treat. So don't go far and don't let there be a lot of time where you're not giving a food reward. Now, I don't want the dogs getting all full and fat because we're giving them so much food. I like to create a meat paste and put it in a squeeze bottle. You know, I'll get some canned chicken, put it in a blender, make a paste. And then I'm rewarding them with a little squeeze of that paste. So it's not like they're getting all full of stuff. And they love it. It's yummy. And trust me, the higher the value the food reward is, the more motivated your dog is to do the behavior, the quicker things are going to happen. So don't be chintzy. Think about the food reward as currency. Okay? I don't know about you, but I'm gonna work harder if you pay me $1,000 versus paying me a buck. Think about the food as currency. Okay? So you want to teach incompatible behaviors. It's called differential reinforcement. Think differential, different. What different behavior can you teach your dog? What do you want your dog to do instead of the behavior you don't want? Because what I'm trying to change your mindset is you're going to want to go straight to a correction when your dog jumps. You're going to go straight to punishment when your dog jumps. And that's just simply not fair. You have not taken the time to teach your dog to do something else. And your dog is just being a dog. And if you keep punishing your dog for just being a dog, and if you don't teach your dog alternative behaviors that would be incompatible to stop the behaviors you don't want, you are just going to, on a daily basis, ruin your relationship with your dog. You hear me? Stop the punishment. I know, it's quick. And for lazy people, it seems like a really great solution. But think, you know, from the animal welfare perspective, boy, that really sucks that they have to experience fear, pain, and intimidation for being a dog when we didn't do our job to teach them something else to do. So that's my rant about that anyway. You want to teach your dog alternative behaviors. Let me see if I've got other email questions or if I've got any questions or comments here in the feed right now. Let's see, we got Michelle. Michelle is, can't get sound to work. Can't hear sound. No sound. No for video. No sound. No sound. Oh my goodness. Nobody's hearing sound. And I've been talking for a long time. Interesting. Well, I'm going to keep going, and I'm going to keep going because we do have the audio podcast, and this is going to be part of the audio podcast. I will figure out what's going on with sound a little bit later. I don't want to get away from what I'm doing here to worry about the sound, because I'm assuming the sound is being recorded for the audio podcast. So I said I wanted to talk about how do you introduce dogs when, especially if you think that there might be a problem with a couple dogs. You know, I gave the example, two people moving in with one another and they each have a dog prior to moving in with one another. The first thing you need to understand about introducing dogs is you don't introduce them right away. And let me tell you what I mean by that. You don't want this quick flash introduction. So one of the things that you should do, especially if you have a concern, spend the first few days swapping scent. What do I mean by swapping scent? All right, you're not introducing the dogs. They don't see each other for the first few days, but you are bringing your, like take a towel and a hand towel and rub it all over each of the dogs. And now give that to the other dog. You want the other dogs to become familiar with each other's scent very well before they ever meet. Okay? Now, the other thing you can begin to do, you can positively associate that scent with high-value food rewards. You can create happiness and positive emotional feelings and a positive emotional state about that scent. When you present that towel and the dog sniffs it, mark and reward, click and reward. And present that to the dog many times throughout the day. And you're going to do that for several days. So that's one of the things. If you have a situation where it's going to take a long time and a lot of work to get the two dogs together, you're just going to keep on every week rubbing that towel over the dog so that that scent just doesn't completely dissipate. You want to keep fresh scent on there. All right, so let's say that we did that for several days. Now, one of the things that we're going to do, we want to go to a neutral location. We don't want to go at one person's property or the other person's property, right? Territorial. So we go to a neutral location, like a park. We want to go somewhere quiet. Now, one of the things that's important is that we have the dogs at a very far distance to begin with. I like to put a 20-foot long line on each of the dogs. A 20-foot long line, if you don't know what a long line is, it's just a very, very long leash. It's got the, you know, the loop handle like any other leash, but it's 20 feet long. You can get them 10 feet, 15, 20. Heck, you can get, I had a 100-foot one I was using the other day. And the reason why I don't want tension on the leash. Remember I talked a little while ago that when a dog feels the tension on the leash, if they're in kind of a state of fight or flight and they feel like, hey, I can't get away because there's this tight leash that's restraining me, they're more apt to go into fight. So we don't want to add that extra stress. Now, we certainly do not want the two dogs to connect. And think about it. If you've got a 20-foot leash on, what does that mean? That means I've got to be more than 20 feet away from the dog, the other dog. But I want you much further than that. Now, I want both of the dogs to be able to see each other. However, they can be curious. Maybe their ears perk up a little bit and they look. But they shouldn't have a care in the world. The distance between the dogs should be such that when they see each other, they don't have a care in the world. That's the first positive experience for the two dogs. Okay? Now, one of the things that you're going to begin to do is when your dog looks at the other dog, you're going to click and reward. Anytime your dog looks at that other dog, you're going to click and reward. Okay? And what I want you to do when your dog looks at the other dog, go, look at that. Click. Now, if you don't know what mark and reward or click and reward are, it's very important. We use a marker training system. We use markers that signify to the dog that A, that behavior I like, and B, you're getting positive reinforcement for that. There's a challenge getting food in a dog's mouth between 0.5 seconds from the time the dog engages in a particular behavior to the time that the food gets in there for the dog to connect the dots. You know, we could be feeding all day long as we're training, but if we're giving the dog the food 3 seconds after the behavior, well, the dog loves the food. The overall experience is better, but the dog's not connecting the dots why it got the food. So what we do is we use clickers or we use auditory markers. For deaf dogs, we use visual markers. And it's just a communication system. You know, I can click a clicker immediately. Now, the clicker isn't magic. And before you can even use one, you've got to pair and condition that with food. So you're going click, treat, click, treat, click, treat, click, treat. Until the dog understands, hey, click means treat. If I'm using a verbal or auditory marker, I might use the word nice. Nice treat, nice treat, nice treat, nice treat. Pairing the two together over and over and over. Now, I'm not going to get into all the nuances of clicker training, but or marker training, but your dogs learn that when it hears click, it's going to get a treat. So when it hears click, it looks back to you. The dog learns if you're using an auditory or verbal marker like nice, when it hears nice, it'll come back and look at you. And that's exactly what we want. We want your dog looking at the strange dog at a distance, far enough away where your dog is relaxed, your dog is calm, the body language is loose. You just know your dog's fine. Not a care in the world. That's the distance you start at. Yes, especially if you've got concern that there might be a problem. When your dog looks at the other dog, you're going to click. The dog's going to look back at you. You're going to do that several times. And then you're going to start adding to the dog's behavior the cue of look at that. Don't ask for look at that. As the dog turns to look at the dog, say, look at that. And then click. Dog looks back to you, gets food. Now, if everything's going great, and you've done that a few times, and the dog's been relaxed, and the dog is loose, you can go a little closer. Don't go a lot closer. Go a little closer. Hey, this doesn't have to happen today. And that's the thing that needs to change in your thinking. Introducing a dog does not have to happen in the same day. Especially if we have concerns. Each time we get, the whole goal of this, guys, is we're going to start at a great distance. Little by little, we're going to get closer and closer and closer and closer. And we want the dog to understand that good things happen when I look at the strange dog. Boom, I get a click and a reward. I get marked and reward. Nice reward. Click, reward. If you're not using markers, if you're not doing clicker training, you need to check out the Pet Talk Today audio podcast. Look for episode 80. Episode 80 is on marker training. It's on clicker training. There's over an hour long podcast on that. You need to check that out because this is very, very, very important. Now, if at any point in time your dog starts to display any nervousness, you need to add more distance. You've gone too close too soon. See, you can only work as quick as the dog's pace. The dog dictates how fast this goes. The dog dictates when we move closer. Okay. Now, when your dog starts to get nervous, if that happens, that is what we call your dog being over threshold. Okay. Or at threshold. Over threshold actually would be more reactivity. The little subtle signs of stress and anxiety, then I'm going to call that at threshold and not over threshold. I want your dog below threshold, where your dog doesn't have a care in the world, because I want the association with the other dog to be, hey, that dog is a zero threat. And matter of fact, every time I see that dog, I get high value food rewards. I love seeing that dog. Let's get a little closer and let's do that some more and a little closer and a little closer. Now, you're going to need to be able to read their body language. If you're not good, if you don't understand a lot about canine body language and you've got a dog that's reactive or aggressive and you're concerned about introducing to another dog, first thing you got to do is learn about canine body language. And let me just say this. Let me put this little disclaimer in here. If you're working with a dog or two dogs that are reactive or aggressive, they could bite. That's dangerous stuff, okay? I always encourage people that have a dog that is aggressive to hire a qualified professional to help you with it because it is not easy. Matter of fact, the most difficult, in my opinion, the most difficult thing out there as far as working on behavior problems with dogs is multiple dogs in the same home that are fighting. Very, very, very challenging. Especially if it's so bad you got to separate them for a while and they can't see each other. You know, because the work that needs to be done to help them can take about 3 to 6 months. Not easy, but it's got to be done or you got to rehome a dog. Okay. Now, as you're getting closer, when it comes time, first of all, listen, anytime you see problems, obviously create more distance, right? As you're getting closer and they actually get to connect, they start sniffing one another. 1, 2, 3, remove the dog. 3 seconds. That's my rule. They get to check out each other for 3 seconds. Now I'm going to pull them away. Because things can be okay for a second or two and then boom, a dog erupts and then, whoa, we've got it going on. Bring them, if everything went well with those 3 seconds, bring them back together for 3 seconds. Pull them apart. Back again for 3 seconds. Pull them apart. Now, they've got to be calm. If they're not calm, they don't get to come near each other. You start having them connect for about 3 seconds at a time. And again, this doesn't have to happen in a day. It can take days and weeks if you've got problematic dogs. Doesn't have to happen in a day. Now, after they've connected for 3 seconds several times and things are going really well, how about 20 seconds? How about 30 seconds? But pull them apart. At any time you start seeing some excitable behavior, pull your dog out of there. Because your dog's excitable behavior might trigger the other dog or vice versa. You know, nervous dogs, boop, dog moves really quick and all of a sudden, boom, they think it's a threat. We want calm, 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 calm dogs. Speaking of calm dogs, have you heard about the supplement Calm Dogs? This is my supplement. This is something that I took 5-6 years to develop because the natural supplements that are on the market really do not work. Go to calmdogs.com, go to doganxiety.com, learn about the Calm Dogs revolution. We are changing dogs' lives and pet parents' lives all across the country. These dogs were suffering with anxiety, separation anxiety, fears, phobias, problems with noise, anxiety and fears, aggression, reactivity, having a difficult time with grooming or vet visits or car rides. I'm so convinced that Calm Dogs will help your dog. It either works for your dog or it's free. And that's why I offer a 100% money-back guarantee. Visit doganxiety.com, visit calmdogs.com today and begin to help your dog. Okay, I want to go to another email question that I have here. And this one is from Jenny. And Jenny says, I've got a dog that barks incessantly. What do I do? Well, Jenny, what does that mean? And I guess I need a little more information. Is your dog barking incessantly when you're home with it? Is your dog barking incessantly when you're gone? See, that makes a big difference. You know, a lot of dogs are going to bark and whine when there's separation anxiety. So I'm wanting to know, is it that? Or do we have a dog that is doing attention-seeking barking? You know, there's all kinds of different barks. There's several different kinds of barking. You know, we've got barks that mean, hey, come closer. There are barks that mean, hey, get away. There are barks that mean, hey, I want to play. There are barks, do this. There are barks, you know, hey, I'm worried about this. All kinds of different barks, and they sound differently. If you want to learn about the different vocalizations that dogs make and what they all mean and how you can kind of separate them and decipher what's what, you can go to my website at dogbehaviorist.com. Again, that's dogbehaviorist.com. And then go to the menu, go to where it says articles. I've got over 60 articles that I've personally authored on various different training and behavior issues that are going to be extremely helpful for you. And this is one of these cases. I've got an article on barking. But if it's a separation anxiety, then you need to be dealing with the separation anxiety. See, we need to be asking ourselves, why is the dog barking? What is the stimulus that's triggering that? Is it boredom? Is it barrier frustration? Is it the dog wants you to give it attention and play? Is it the dog is nervous or anxious and we've got a separation anxiety issue? A lot of different things. But if you go to dogbehaviorist.com, you can find that article on barking. But also, I've got an article on canine body language. And canine body language is going to be critical for any behavior problem that you're trying to work with. Again, if you want to know what's going on with your dog, you need to understand the body language. You can predict behavior when you can understand the canine body language. Okay. I'm just curious if everybody is still not able to hear me on Facebook. I'm not seeing that anybody's able to get any sound. Although there's two people still viewing. But the other thing that I wanted to talk about as far as how to introduce dogs is the fact that, you know, if you've got a dog that is scared to death of other dogs or very aggressive, you, and I said this before, you need to hire a professional. This is very dangerous work. Okay. Now, there are a couple of things that need to happen if you've got a very reactive or a very aggressive dog, and that is muzzle conditioning. We've got to be safe. That means that you have got to get your dog used to wearing a muzzle. And dogs hate it when you just slap a muzzle on them. One of the things you can do with a muzzle, now I like the wire basket muzzles, but a different kind of basket muzzle, like Baskerville, will work. I don't like those mesh, you know, those mesh material muzzles. They're very constricting. But when there's a basket muzzle, the dog can drink, the dog can eat, the dog can breathe. And when that's the most important thing, it's a lot more comfortable. But what I like to do is I like to turn that basket muzzle into a little bowl by wrapping Saran wrap around it. And I start putting yummy treats in there. I put the dog's food in there. And the first couple of weeks, I just present that muzzle to the dog and they start sticking their snout in there, grabbing and eating yummy stuff. After a couple of weeks, they love it when I bring that muzzle out. They come running to me. Then after that, what I do is I take the Saran wrap off. I'm not using it or making a bowl out of it and putting food and treats in it. Now I'm going to put a little piece of packing tape, clear packing tape on the inside of that basket muzzle. And I'm going to smear a little bit of food smear, peanut butter, some kind of meat paste, something really yummy. Okay. I like the peanut butter if your dog doesn't have a nut allergy, and make sure it's sugar-free because they're licking. It, you know, it doesn't go away right away. It takes them time to get through it. So what I'm doing is I'm putting a little smear of peanut butter on this packing tape that's on the inside of the muzzle, on the muzzle. I don't want to get the muzzle full of peanut butter, so I can just rip that tape off and everything's clean. But what I can do now is I can now present that muzzle like this, right? And put it over the dog's snout. And now the dog has got it over its snout and it's licking that peanut butter. And as it's licking that peanut butter, I'm messing with the straps. I might not be buckling it. If the dog looks really comfortable, I might go to buckle it and see what happens. But I'm just going to mess with the straps for a little while and take it off, put it back on, mess with the straps, take it off, put it back on, mess with the straps. Then eventually I'm going to buckle it up. Now, when you're trying to get your dog used to something they might not like, whether it's another dog, a person, whether it's the muzzle, You've got to do this slowly. You've got to do this gradually. You've got to do this systematically. At any time your dog starts looking nervous or uncomfortable, you're moving too quick. You see what I'm doing here? I'm pairing positive things with that muzzle. And I'm doing it gradually in little bite-sized pieces. I'm breaking it down into baby steps and getting the dog used to it. If you got an aggressive dog, if you got a reactive dog, yeah, we want you to work with other dogs or people and helpers and trainers and behavior consultants and behaviorists to be able to close that distance so that they are more comfortable with dogs or people if they have those problems. But like I said, we've got to do that gradually. We've got to do that systematically. We've got to do that slowly. Now, for very, very, very severe cases, you might need medication. Oh, I said the M word. Nobody likes that. Listen, I'm not talking about medication that sedates your dog. I'm not talking about medication that makes your dog a zombie. I'm not talking about any type of medication that's going to harm your dog or change the personality that you like that your dog has. Matter of fact, medications I'm talking about, you would never even know the dog's on them. Okay. But yeah, if you've got a serious problem, very serious aggression, if you've got a dog that's biting and hurting people, biting and hurting other dogs, and it's pretty much happening whenever that trigger's there, and if it's not a superficial bite, you need to make an appointment with your veterinarian. I'm not a vet. I can't give medical advice. I can't tell you if your dog needs medication or should have it or not. Well, I probably could, but I'm not supposed to, all right? I need you to make an appointment with your veterinarian or find a veterinary behaviorist. Because when it's the real deal, when it's real aggression, especially, here's the kicker, especially when there's no threat and a dog is just freaking out as if there's this huge threat that it has to fight off and there's no threat. Where's the dog getting that perception? Especially, hey, if we know the history and there's been no trauma, no bad experiences. You know, there's lots of dogs that experienced no trauma, had great socialization when they were young, and as they got older, began to be fearful of people and or dogs, and then become aggressive towards people and dogs. How does that happen? Genetics. Yeah. Sometimes there's a genetic component. And that's something that we can help treat as well. Let me look and see if we've got other questions here. Okay, I've got a question from Jimmy. And Jimmy says, I've got a 3-year-old Shih Tzu. And I, this is funny because it's a Shih Tzu. I'm sorry. I can't get the puppy. I can't get the dog to stop going to the bathroom in the house. And that's not the word he used. You know, there's nothing worse than a dog that uses the house as a toilet. And I'm not a fan of setting paper down or pee pads or anything like that. I don't think it's a good idea to teach your dog to use the house as a toilet. And that's what putting paper down or using pee pads does. Listen, I know you think that your dog understands that it shouldn't go in the house. I'm here to tell you that's not the case. Get that out of your head. If your dog knew it wasn't supposed to go in the house, it wouldn't do it. You've got to start over from scratch, potty training. Yep. And what does that mean? The number one rule when it comes to potty training is that you need to supervise or confine. Whenever you can't see the puppy, it needs to be in a crate. So you need to do crate training. But yeah, you got to start over potty training 101. Getting the dog out there every hour. Having high-value food rewards, rewarding the dog when it goes to the bathroom in the correct place, making sure that you don't let the dog get out of your eyesight, making sure that you confine the dog when you can't watch the dog, make sure that before you confine the dog, that you let the dog go outside to relieve itself. Now, I am just about out of time. What you can do, if you've got a problem, All right, Jimmy and anybody else with potty training, go to the Pet Talk Today audio podcast. Do the search Pet Talk Today. Go to Apple Podcasts, whatever. Wherever you get your podcast, look for episode 16. That's season one, episode 16. And that is a full hour on potty training. I guarantee if you follow the instructions in episode 16 on and my guide for potty training, you can't help. You can't help but have success. Well, that music means that we are out of time. Those of you that were watching on Facebook, apparently we didn't have sound. I want to apologize for that. Hopefully you're watching subtitles or you go to the audio Pet Talk Today podcast. I'll be back next Saturday. Have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget to train. Practice makes not perfect, but permanent.